very high authority. The Bhagavad Purana is stating that the holy name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Sudha Nityamukto Abhinatvam Nama. Nama Chintamani, it is like Krishna is like touchstone. We all know that story, how there was a stone which touched metal, which turned into gold. I think everyone heard that one, touchstone. So the touchstone, it always acts. That is, the holy name has a specific potency, that it acts regardless of whether we are philosophically familiar with the meaning of the mantra. It is said, Purna Sudha Nitya Mukto. It is carrying all purity, and it offers eternal liberation from birth and death. Because it is Abhinatvam Naminamino. Because it is not different from me personally. So in this way, Padma Purana explains something about the holy name. We know that the holy name of Krishna is Krishna. The name Krishna is the same as Krishna himself. It is equally potent. And therefore, the name of Krishna is all attractive, because Krishna himself is the reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, Hare means service to Krishna. So one who engages in service to Krishna, the all-attractive, will experience Ram, which means Ramanti Yogino Nante Satchananda Chedatmani, which is speaking about transcendental happiness. So by serving Krishna, the all-attractive, one experiences transcendental happiness. And that's really as simple as it is, the meaning of the mantra. So without further ado, we'll chant a little, and then we'll see where it goes from here. So as the name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna, in the same way, the Bhagavad Gita naturally are the words spoken by Krishna. And therefore, the Bhagavad Gita is also faultless. Anything that we speak, you know, the inadvertent imperfection may be there, and that's just our position. But whatever Krishna speaks is perfect, and the depth of what Krishna actually says is much greater than one actually might think at a quick perception of the book. Then there is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a further expansion of the Bhagavad Gita, and it is known as the Bhagavat Purana. So it's also Bhagavat, it's also describing Bhagavan. Whatever Bhagavat means, that which describes Bhagavan. Bhagavan, the word Bhagavan has different meanings, because in Sanskrit you can break up words in many ways and then you get various meanings. But generally speaking, the word is broken up in he who attains all opulences. Van means to possess, and then Bhaga means all opulences. Another way of breaking up the word Bhagavan is Bhajaniya Guna Visista, or three words, Bhagava, three syllables, Bhajaniya Guna Visista, which means that the Lord is irresistible. you have to worship him. So that we got from Jiva Goswami. So that's nice. So in other words, spiritual life is not an artificial imposition on the mind, something that's very difficult to create, that we have to, under rigid discipline and with a lot of prayer, somehow squeeze the mind into this trance, or meditate, and meanwhile the mind is fighting to go here and there and everywhere, and it takes you to the moon and back. So what to do? This is the principle. Is Krishna is just capturing us. He's capturing us. Srila Prabhupada describes that a German professor who later took to Krishna consciousness and became a sannyasi came to India and he visited the different temples. So he came to the temple of so many devatas, he saw, and he saw in the hands of each of them, he saw a weapon. In the hands of Durga Devi, he saw so many weapons. Then he came to a temple of Krishna, and he said, ah, here is the Supreme. He said, because all the others, they are working. They're having weapons. That's work. But Krishna is playing a flute. Aha, that is God. He's enjoying. So that's not a shallow remark, if you think about it. So Krishna is not working. He's not the provider. He's not the one who will give us everything we pray for. Krishna rather performs his own transcendental activities and plays his transcendental flute, which attracts all who hear. And when Krishna plays that flute, with it he captures the heart of people and brings them to this, away from this world, away from whatever we want to fix here, to the spiritual realm. See, in the material world, there's always something that needs to be fixed. Just that one little thing. Like I gave the example, we made the CD and we were early this year. You know, I make one every year, and this for Rath Yatra. And this year we were early, it was all ready, and it was checked and everything ready. We went to the printer and this, that, and then there's a fold in the CD. So now it's like it's gonna be last minute. Material world, you know? It's like there's always something like that, you know what I mean? It's like there's always a cause of anxiety. Just when you think everything is under control, woo, there it goes. Therefore, it's natural that we pray in this world for solutions, that we pray for, you know, relief from our unhappiness, or for some success, or protection, you know, like... like this, we may have all these prayers, and it's natural prayers, because this is the world where, you know, Murphy's Law applies. Whatever can go wrong will go wrong, Murphy says. But the world of Krishna is the perfect world, where Krishna is the perfect center and everyone experiences perfect happiness. So what Krishna does with his flute is he just attracts us and takes us away from this world to his world. And we just say, like, you know. And therefore, it is said that one who takes to spiritual life experiences gradually the issues of the world as smaller and smaller. Prabhupada said it's like you go up in a plane and you look from the window and all the houses and the cars now look like matchboxes. And say, all the things of the world now look small. So as you go up then the worldly things look very small and insignificant. And that was the teaching of the self-realized soul. So yes, we see that in Krishna. Of course, also while we are in this world, Krishna is also there. While we are busy with things of this life, it's all about the next life and nothing about this one. No, happiness is there in this life. Because we, in serving Krishna, we find actually our nature. See, it's like everyone by nature is a servant. You can't get around it. You can't escape it. I mean, you know, it's like as soon as you get married, there it starts. That's the way it is, you know. Husband serves the wife serves the husband, and together they serve the children. And the children are just there to be served. You know? that's children. What can be said? Who is the master in this house? I'm telling you. I'm telling you, who is the master in this house? She smiles, she knows. And then the baby cries, and both the parents are going to attend to the child. Who is the master of this house? I'm telling you. So it's interesting how ultimately we wind up serving. But as soon as the child grows up, oh, it also starts, and it has to start serving, you know. My mother had this rule, never leave the room with empty hands. It's a Dutch thing, you know. It's like whenever you go and there is something that has to go to the kitchen, bring it there, and so on. Oh, I hated it. Or just as I was reading my favorite book, you know, my favorite whatever book, science fiction or something, I was totally into it. Then she sent me to a shop, you know, go do some shopping. God. But so it was hard to surrender to the service. But service appears everywhere. The politicians, they have to serve the people to get the votes, and it's hard work. And everyone is in the business of service. So, because that's our nature, we have to serve. So actually, in service to Krishna, we find freedom. When we try to be a master of the situation, in control of everything, all we find is anxiety. And when we serve Krishna, then we gradually become liberated from all anxiety and simply accept anyway. It's only the material world. What can you do? So it happens, wrote Ravindra Sarup in his blog. You can still find it on the web. So it happens. Which is interesting, because so it happens indeed, right? And what can we say about that? It's not under our control. When you say so it happens, it's very clear that we have to accept in this world. There is no way around it. Yeah, sometimes your dreams are fulfilled and other times they're not, but so it happens. And it's like nothing, what can I say? I'm in the same boat as all of you. To me, it also happens. Yeah. What to do? But then, because Krishna is there, and because Krishna is wonderful, then all these other things, they gradually are not so important anymore. And Krishna, day by day, gains in importance because he deserves it. Who else deserves it? I mean, some famous personality, and you're the chairman of the fan club. You know, Michael Jackson. Well, that's a letdown. Just to name, you know, like, huh? Imagine if you would have invested everything into being the chairman of Michael Jackson's fan club. That was a mistake.
That's been One Direction.
So the point is there that will not satisfy, because sooner or later the illusion is being disturbed. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says you meet that person who has wonderful qualities, who is indeed glorious, intelligent, and just wonderful. And you look at this person and you see all the qualities and you think, this person is like an ocean of qualities. After a while, you know who you're dealing with, and you know that actually this person is no bigger than a pond. And you've walked around and you are no longer interested. Yeah. Ready, looking for some new inspiration. That is material relationship. So, it's all about Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, always pointed at Krishna. Right? It's not me, it's Krishna. It's Krishna. And that's really like what it is. You know, did you see by any chance that movie, Oh My God? Some of you did. I also did, because I heard about it. And it's like, it begins with one man in Bombay, or Mumbai, and he has a shop selling murtis. So all these murtis are there in the shop. And this customer comes in the shop, and then he has this whole thing, you know, like he has this. And here, this is a very old murti from Krishna. It's like, it's a few hundred years old. And actually, it's been in my family since 150 years. My great-great-grandmother, she was worshipping this deity. And if you come and listen carefully, you can hear the playing of the flute. The customer listens. And yes, he can hear it. Can you hear? Can you hear? Yes. Are you hearing? Yes. And he buys the murti. And then he goes away with the murti, and then the shopkeeper goes to the back and he puts a new murti. It's exactly the same on the shelf. So, anyway, he's a pakabanya, as they say in India. Right? And he goes then on his scooter with his assistant. Helmet, scooter. And they go to some function, and in that function there are some swamis. One, or god man, one is there with long hair and long saffron dress. The other one is having short dress. The one with short dress is bald, big tilak, and he's eating bananas all the time. Let's see him. He's eating bananas. And then some people come, they bring a tray of wax, and then these gurus, they place their feet into the wax and get their footprint taken, and people are just like adoring them and worshipping them, and the other one still eating bananas. So anyway, then our friend, the Murtiwala, he has no faith in them at all. He says, just cheaters, and it becomes a whole argument, and the banana wala is sort of like getting angry and shaking his fist at him, you are blaspheming, you will see what will happen. Then, the next day, there is an earthquake in Bombay, overnight actually, and when he goes to his shop, all the murtis broken, all of them, all the murtis in the shop are broken. So then, no problem, because he has insurance. Yeah, so he goes to the drawer, pulls out insurance policy, and he goes to the insurance company, and it's a fancy building, multi-story. He goes inside and he meets the insurance man, who is very well dressed and has a very expensive watch, a Rolex, you know, Rolex. So he says to his assistant, Rolex. And then, you know, so he comes to discuss how much he's going to get from the insurance. And then the insurance agent says, I'm sorry, but, you know, the company is not liable to pay anything. Not liable to pay anything? No. Have you read the small letters? There's always small letters, and it's in the small, you know, the devil is in the small letters. And this time it says that the company, insurance company, is not liable to pay in case of natural disaster or an act of God. So this is clearly an act of God, you know. And then the man goes, is this an act of God? You're telling me this is an act of God? And it is a whole drama. Next thing, next scene, we see him in the office of some lawyer, and he is ready to start a court case against God. Because it's an act of God. He broke all the murtis. Then he has to pay for it. That was the logic, you see. Not many lawyers wanted to take the case, but but eventually he found some lawyer, because, you know, there's always a lawyer as long as there's money. So the lawyer took the case, and then it starts. Mm. So yeah, he gets in trouble because people are like chasing him because he makes a case against God. But anyway, then some man on a motorbike saves him. And this stranger, but the stranger becomes his friend and looks after him. And in, as the story unfolds, it's clear that it's actually Krishna on a in a modern outfit who is helping him. But so the court goes through the hearing of the case, this, that, in the pre-rounds in the court, and they accept the case. And then the judge says, now, in the next round, you have to present the evidence. He says, evidence? How am I going to present the evidence? You know, the court did this. But then his motorbike friend, he gives him Bhagavad Gita. He goes, Bhagavad Gita. He says, yeah, read it, you know. And then he reads the Bhagavad Gita, and then he finds many verses where, you know, Krishna takes responsibility. He's the supreme controller. Maya jakshena suyate sachara charam hetunanena kunteya jagat vivarivartate. For example, I am the cause of everything, and I am the controller of everything. So he's writing down all these kind of things. And then his friend gives him the Quran. He writes down all the things from the Quran. He writes down all the things from the Bible where... And finally he makes his case, right? And he, in this way, he is taking all the religions to court, and yeah, basically pointing out that that they were all wrong. And then he gives this big speech how he wins the case. He wins the case, because what he has done is he has, since he's a businessman, he has not taken God directly, but he takes all the representatives of God. So he wins the case, and when he wins the case, he gets a heart attack. You know, from and then the result is, finally, he's in the hospital and he's just practically dead. So all these, then you see all these gurus and so on. They have now realized how they can make money out of him. You know, he became very popular. So they make a temple with a deity of him. You say, actually, he's an avatar, you know, he was an avatar who came to purify us and take us to the real thing. And they're going to inaugurate a big temple and get big donations for it. And then Krishna comes in, you know, this time not on the motorbike, but dressed in traditional outfit, but the same person, and says, wake up. So he wakes up. He says, look, you know, look what's going on. They're making a murti from you in a temple. And he says, what? From me? You have to do something about it. And Krishna says, look, it's your murti, not mine. So you do something about it. Then you see him go there on his scooter, and then at the end he comes and he just breaks that murti. Right? And he says, this is all false, you know. And in conclusion he says, God is in the heart. That's it. So he declares all institutional religion dead and false and exploitive and corrupt. And he says the real thing is like God in the heart. And that's the end of the movie. So it's not a happy end. And somewhere they have some background music also. Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. It's just a little, it's not the mantra we sang before, but it looks like the one we sang before. So they're hinting something. It's smart. Because it's a different mantra, you know. So you can't really sue them for it, but it's close. Yeah. Yeah. So there is indeed, you know, a lot of corruption in institution. And sometimes they say that organized religion is the death of the true religious spirit. Right? It's like where it's a matter of from the heart, really. And how can you institutionalize things? So we have some sympathy for that. But one doesn't exclude the other. Because institution also means community. And community is, as we all know in our life, community is important. If you have no community, it becomes very hard. Community offers you culture, like-mindedness, and therefore it gives you a safe environment to associate with. It's like no Ravanas, you know, only Ram, only devotees of Ram makes it easier. So in this way, it's so institution offers us support. Institution also can preserve teachings. So all that institution can do. The problem comes when people adhere to some institution and just their membership will do. They're a member of a church, a member of a temple, a member of a masjid, and all that is enough for status. If you have the right topi, and then, you know, then everything is inshallah, right? And if you don't have the topi, you know, different topis, mini topi with a pin on the head, so many varieties. So then it all becomes external. So I was on a plane from Canada to New York, and this man next to me goes, I had a dream. I said, brother, tell me all about it. He says, I had a dream. where all the people in the world live together in peace. I said, brother, that's a wonderful dream. He says, yes, I had a dream of a world without religion. I said, ho, 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 brother. You know, that's of course good from one perspective, but what about me, you know? So I'm not 20 anymore, right? It's difficult to change now, you know. My whole life I've gone in this direction. I mean, you know, I can't start again at the bottom of the ladder, you know. So what you gonna do with people like me who are just, you know, too far gone? Then he looked at me, very serious, and he said, yes, you are a problem. Oh, well. So what to do? When religion gets external, then everyone digs in his own tradition, and this tradition is against that one, and that one is against the third one, and the fourth one, and so many complications then arise. So institution alone is never enough. Belonging to institution alone is never enough. It is true that the essence is in the heart. The institution is meant to preserve the teachings. Then the individual takes those teachings and in a fresh way, completely fresh, as a fresh individual, goes to work with these teachings. Not looking left, not looking right as to what are the others adhering to, but actually, what does it say here? And what do those who I have faith in this, you know, those who I know to be very serious, what do they say this means? And in this way, one has to go to work with this knowledge and realize it himself within the heart, yeah, by following it. Only then will it work. So, the Oh My God movie was, in conclusion, not completely spot on, but there were interesting points in it, and it definitely had a good go at organized religion. And it's a funny movie. I mean, you know, there's lots of funny details that I didn't tell you now. I'm sure you're gonna check it out. Yeah, so like this, we are here in a home, and actually the Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is right at home in the home. Because it doesn't require anything else. Kirtan is something can be done in every home, and which transforms every home. Yeah, it's a simple thing. We could also have turned on the TV and all looked at the movie. And we might have been entertained, but we have chosen to have some kirtan, some spiritual discussion, because we're going a little deeper in this discussion. Deeper than just some fun for the evening. Yeah, nice movie, some fun for the evening. Some drinks, some snacks. Yeah, let's go. But some entertainment must be there also. So I've tried not to make it too dry, but at the same time. At the same time, we also have to go touch on deeper things in life, right? They go beyond the temporary pleasures, and we have given some indication that there is the other world, the world of Krishna, the eternal world, and that is more important than the temporary world. We're not saying, you know, you can't have anything in the temporary world, and you know, and you must live on one carrot and three chickpeas every day. That's it. You know, that would be a bit. So it's not about renounce the world, but no need to give up the world, but give up sinful activity. Of course, the word sin is an old-fashioned word, which you find in old traditions, and it has a connotation from sin, you know. Give us a break, you know. I agree. I can translate it into a more modern a word. Like, for example, destructive behavior. Oh, that's very bad. Oh no, that's very bad. Destructive behavior, that should not be allowed. Any psychologist will tell you, no. That we cannot have. Destructive to others, destructive to self. Oh no. This is a psychological problem. Yes. And psychology rules, so that we can clearly understand. The word sin sort of sounds, brings it. You know, as soon as you say sin, someone says, come on. Just a few drops. It's good for the germs. You know these things, you know. Are you a man or what? You know? Like this. So, some things are to be given up, and that is that one should not build his happiness at the expense of others. See? Our happiness should include the happiness of all. Then it is good. Then it's noble, you know. Then you can actually feel really good about yourself, see. If you have cheated half of Durban and you're sitting in your mansion, you know, I tell you, you will not be peaceful. You'll be in anxiety. Think, you know, there are guys out there who, you know, you think there are guys out there who want to get me, and you know, and there are, there will be. You gotta be careful. But one who builds his happiness, including the happiness of others, well, such a person will be widely appreciated. That's a saintly person. So that's intelligent, if you think about it. So that's the deeper message we're getting of how to live in this world. So it's not only about the next, it's also about this world. So be happy on the sofa or on your mattress on the floor, whatever Krishna gave you. Be happy. And try and do something for the happiness of others in this world. Then human existence becomes meaningful. And if that's based on the Gita, that's the only way you can give people happiness. See, you know, how to make people happy. I also, in my country we also have beggars who have, especially drug addicts, and then they come and, they tell you that their money was stolen and they need some money to go home, and if you can please help them and give something, and, you know, then they buy drugs if you give that. So, it's difficult to help. It's very difficult to help. It's difficult to do good. You know, if I Here is a man, he is dying, and he needs immediate medical care. I am ready, you know, to just give 20,000 rand, save his life. Life is saved. Did I do a good thing? What would you say?
Yes, you did.
Not sure. 3 months later, that man, in a bank robbery, shoots someone in the head. I should have let him die.
How would you know?
How would I know? That's the problem. That's the problem. So how to know? How to know? That's exactly the issue. How to know? And how to know that it really was the right action. Very difficult to know. Therefore, doing good in this world is very complicated. But if we include the Bhagavad Gita of Krishna, it becomes crystal clear. Because by basing our actions on the Bhagavad Gita, we bring goodness to all. We live by the Gita, we give others the knowledge of the Gita, and everyone gets goodness in that way. We, by giving it, become more fixed in goodness. People receive elements of goodness in their life. And see, I'm the living proof. Because I wasn't always living like this. It says that, sometimes they say that youth has a license to break the rules. Well, I took advantage of that license. What can I say? What can I say? I did. Yeah. But someone gave me Bhagavad Gita. Then I could see the point. Then I saw the point, actually, that what's the goal of life? Before, everything looked so meaningless. My father was so serious about making money, but he also had so much headache. And I was thinking, you know, do I have to become like this? Like my father, I have the same headache. I don't know. I wasn't sure. I don't need so much money. Then I also won't have that much headache. So I figured that out. So now I don't have a lot of money, but I also don't have any headache. So, in that way, thanks to the Bhagavad Gita. Not that everybody who reads the Bhagavad Gita will not have money. No. You know, there is this thing in India that Krishna is known, the demigods, right? Lord Shiva is Asutosh, you worship him, you immediately get benefits. But Krishna, they say, he takes away material things. So don't worship Krishna, you know, because he is Hari, he will take everything away. So what about this? What's the answer on this one? Well, this point, we can clearly see it illustrated in the story of Sudama. Sudama, the Brahmana, was very poor. To a point where he was trembling, there was nothing to eat, it was very, very problematic. His wife, she could no longer see her husband in that condition. So she said, look, you're an old school friend of Krishna, and he lives in Dwarka, where, you know, 16,108 palaces. Why don't you go see him and ask him for something? Sudama didn't even hear the ask him for something. All he heard was, why don't you go see Krishna? And he said, well, that's a good idea. So his wife gave him this gift for Krishna, and it was a bundle of old, stale, dry chip rice, and Sudama went, right? And Krishna, and Sudama was a little embarrassed, you know, to give this gift that his wife had given. So he wasn't going to give it when he saw Krishna. But Krishna anyway said, hey Sudama, you didn't bring anything for me? No. What's that? Do you have that in that bundle? I said, oh no. Krishna just took it open and said, ah, chip rice, my favorite. And then he ate it. And the goddess of fortune checked him. This is not suitable for you. But, you know, when Sudama returned home, then this lady, this in royal dress with servants, came to meet him from a distance. Thinking, who is this? And then it turned out to be his wife. She looked a bit different now. At first he hadn't recognized her, but then sort of, okay. So then Sudama afterwards lived in great opulence. So that's the proof that not everyone who worships Krishna becomes poor. So don't worry. But sages have always, in the history of mankind, stayed clear from too much material entanglement, you know, and kept life simple. If we can be simple, that is an asset. Simplicity is an asset. If you're simple at heart, that's a great gift. If you need a million things, you got a headache. Yeah. If you're simple at heart, so, you know, of course you like something nice, but simple. You know, doesn't need to be like a skyscraper, just a cottage. Cottage. Not a penthouse and a helicopter and all that, you know. So simplicity. Old men, I just saw old men having a facelift. What for? What's he having a facelift for? For who? What's on his mind? He's probably taking Viagra as well. Yeah. And like, what to do? That's not what the purpose of old age. Because facelift or not, doesn't make you any younger. Right? You may look young, but you are as old as you always, as you ever were, and your time is running out. So why waste your time with a new face and everything that comes from that? Better face old age. And when the ladies are no longer interested in you, yeah, some old man, you know, scary old man. Yeah. Good, then you're free. That's a good time. That is the time that we are free to just think about our business, how to prepare for the end of life. So, what a strange society. So the Bhagavad Gita is very nice. It brings everything back to the essence. ISKCON is also nice as an institution. Not everything about it. No, because that can't be, you know, in an institution, because there are people, right, and some are very nice and some are, you know. When I became involved in this movement, it was after long deliberation, and I had read the Gita and I was convinced about it. So I moved into the temple. And I was thinking as I was going to the temple, it will be wonderful because I will be finally with like-minded people. Then I moved into the temple, and then I found that person who I always thought was horrible, he had also joined the Hare Krishna. that was a shock. I said, how is it possible? Not him. It can't be, but he did. And then, so I had to live with him, you know. I had to put up with him. Oh. So That's why one should see an institution is a vehicle that carries the teachings that we can apply in our life so that we can realize these teachings in our heart. So ultimately, it's up to us, the individual, what we want to do with it. I have nice tilak, you have a nice dot, you know. You have both nice shirts and shorts. And everyone has his outfit, everyone has his position. And at the end of the day, it's up to us what we make of our life. Everyone gets the opportunity. Some are very serious, others are dragging their feet. Some are too slow, what to do? Some never even get out of the start blocks. False start. So, the Bhagavad Gita is the greatest gift. Agreed?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I thank you for listening to me for a long time. I told you many things. I hope it has to end somewhere, and to end with the Gita is good. If you have some comments or questions, you can try for that. Awesome. Some chatting, you know, doesn't have to be so official. Yeah, it's like, it's just out of fashion, you know, this to have evenings like this. Yeah? I mean, you do it sometimes, right? But not like regular. It's just not the fashion anymore. That's all it is. It's just two different things, you know. It's not electronic, you know. I mean, you know, you can't switch him on and off. You can't put him on another channel to see what's there in case it's better. You know, quickly look if he has another channel. That thing, you know. So it's sort of, we're not used to that anymore, right? You just have the restlessness, you know, of like tap, loop, you know, interactive, quick, you know. But this is what people used to do every evening. When I went to Vrindavan, I went to India, I traveled to India, and I came to Vrindavan, and in those, and then I lived in Vrindavan, and the time I lived in Vrindavan was from 78 till 84. And at that time, every house in Vrindavan would have kirtan at night. Every house. Now if you walk around, every house is television and a satellite disc, but nowadays, but then, every house, kirtan. So simple, at night, every night, just some kirtan, little katha, and then some prasad, and then everything. Good, simple, but very sublime. So it doesn't take much, doesn't cost much. And yeah. And it's also fun to make music yourself instead of, you know, just passive. And the modern things are very passive, you know. It's a computer game. I see these people, you know, on planes, like pulling down the fours, you know, or that one where the blocks are falling down and you have to like put them on. Gosh, and hours, so much time is wasted with this. So much time, amazing. How many hours of our life computer games, which are like, some people think, say, well, it's good, you know, it makes you sharp. I don't think so. I think it makes you dull. That's my conclusion is, if you play computer games, it makes you totally dull. Yeah, because no more creative thinking. Just like, or shooting or something. Missed, or Mario.
Am I right?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I meant to, it's not a question. Everybody here has met you before, but I meant to introduce, well, my neighbors, Selvin and Rani, and their two children.
Oh,
he
nice.
Always brings me to the temple. Whenever
okay.
I need a lift, he works at RK Kansa, I just pitch up there. And
wow. good neighbor. talking about good neighbors, eh? That's very nice.
And the children are always with me, almost every day.
Oh, that's
she loves Jagannath. She calls him Jaga.
That's Lord Chaitanya also did.
Yeah.
For the monks, also Jaga. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Very nice. Well, I'm nice. It's a pleasure to meet you all. And thank you for the opportunity to give me a chance to say something about Krishna, because you know, that helps me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Indra Bhatta for a long time was doing a course on Bhagavad Gita.
Sorry, ma'am.
You used to do a course on Bhagavad Gita?
Yes, I did, Maharaj. Yes.
And many. That actually is right. Yeah. So now it's 8:45.
Would you like some ginger tea?
Yeah, maybe. If
you know, whatever question you might have, you know, you can try and clarify whatever you like.
Yeah. That's not always easy to think of a question. You know. Except for Rukmini, she can always think of a question. Yes, Rukmini.
The Pasimut Sudharma, recently there was an article written on it, and there was some controversy as to why Rukmini asked Sudharma wanted Krishna to stop eating the chopped rice.
Yeah, I mean, what? No, it's okay. Now, some say that the goddess of fortune well, it was enough blessings. But I think she simply really wanted Krishna to have the best. And that it was just, there was no other motive than simply what it looks like. That this is not suitable for you. You work for the Lord, you know. As a devotee of the Lord and you're serving the Lord, how can you want the Lord to have something like that? Personally, would be inclined to take that that's all there really was. I think sometimes we make it all so complicated.
Maharaj, if I may ask.
Please, please.
Thanks. You mentioned psychology earlier on, and you think of a psychologist, and generally, says, well, at any time if someone has got a problem, if it's a major problem, and you want to go to a psychologist for advice, it's believed that because of their knowledge, their education, their study, they are professionals, they'll give you the correct advice.
Mm.
So, I haven't heard of, well, I don't know of people that would come to somebody like yourself, who's so spiritually advanced. I have. So I put this to you, that if a family, good family, lovely family, ends up with a major problem, you know, a family of four, and one of them creates a problem within the family, one of the family creates a real major problem, upsets the peace of the house, and what would you advise the family to do to get back their peace?
The first thing I would say is, it's your family, and that means you are together. And in one sense, you are one unit. So the problem of one is the problem of all. It's not only that this one person is causing trouble to the others, you know, by misbehavior. But there's a deeper reason behind it. This person has a problem for this misbehavior. And so you have to like look for the cause. Why is it that this family member is in this condition? And what can we do to help? So if that attitude is there, I think, you know, then it will go forward and the family will come out of it eventually, and relationships will be restored. Because the apparent external misbehavior is a symptom of an internal issue that needs to be addressed. That's what I would say. And that's just without knowing any details.
Sure.
And of course, you know, if there are details, then it may change things a little bit. That's sure. Also there, you know what I'm saying? You know, in some cases, you may have to add to that. And if, say, there is... Yeah, I mean, I know some parents, and the son had become a serious drug addict, and at one point they couldn't let him in the house anymore. So yeah, I respected that, but I told him, but you should be open to meet him outside the house then, in a neutral place. Yeah. You should still keep a door open, he's still your son, somehow or other. Because with your children, you know, you have to, in a sense, be an unconditional well-wisher. Yeah. Otherwise, what kind of... You know what I'm saying? That's what a parent really is meant to be, an unconditional well-wisher. So sometimes you have to deal with it with some restriction, but you stay a well-wisher. I think that's a proper parental attitude, at least. What would you say?
Yes, right.
Sometimes when you get close to all this, you realize it's not as simple as it seems on the surface, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes this goal a little deeper because it's not just maybe one person involved, maybe there are others through that person who are also involved, and it becomes quite a tangle, makes it very difficult for the person to find a solution, depending on what the problem is.
Yeah.
Actually, it's so difficult to tell such people, for instance, that look, it's the law of karma that, you know, which has, which someone has to answer for. Maybe in some other lifetime, something like this has happened. Yeah, so what he is talking about, Maharaj, I'm very familiar with. So,
yeah.
That's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I probably could say that I tried to help myself, and I'll continue to do so. Because it's a wonderful family that we're talking about, a really nice family. And when it gets shaken up at the roots without a genuine cause, then it becomes very painful, not only to that immediate family, but it goes further than that.
Mm.
So,
yeah, complexities.
A lot of prayer came from various angles, and somehow God is answering those prayers, actually. That's what I feel.
Mm. Yeah, at least we have that, you know. We have Krishna to hold on to. We have the Gita, so we have a foundation. So whatever the situation does, we try to help. We pray for help. And then, if it comes, if things improve, then it's nice. If not, well, then we're still. We find solace in the prayer ourselves, because sometimes you can't help the situation, no matter how much you want and pray. Yeah. In some cases, it's like now you were speaking about psychologists and speaking about people like me. So I get like a lot of people writing to me, and a lot of people asking for advice and presenting problems, and or coming in person. And then I have to be careful, because I could easily spend all my time with the problem cases, because somehow or other they're more vocal, yeah? And then I would spend all my time just dealing with people who are deeply entangled in problems, and oftentimes are lacking people that are lacking in initiative to bring themselves out of that situation. So there's some inherent fundamental problem in them, in them, that they kind of indulge in their problems. As a spiritual leader, that would not be the wisest engagement. Maybe for a psychologist that would be right, you know, to deal with people that really indulge in a problem. As a spiritual leader, I try to help people, but at one point I have to turn my energy to those who are really taking to this Krishna consciousness, and who can do something for it to benefit other people. So I can't invest all my energy into trouble cases only, like a psychologist would do. That's his job. Because I have to bring spirituality into the world as much as possible. So I also need to spend time with the quality people who can then, you know, take this and give it to so many others. So sometimes you have to move on. Some people have to be helped through life. Because that may not apply to you, to that situation. Situation, I don't know anything about it. And in such a general way, well, I just tried to, about that situation with that family in particular. I think I just wanted to show that we are sensitive and are trying to look for holistic solutions. More I could not do, you know, in an unknown situation.
Is it a case that God helps those who help themselves as well? So a psychologist, for example, may be part of a solution.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look for the deepest underlying spiritual solution,
sure,
to solve all problems.
Yeah.
But sometimes maybe a psychologist can contribute to the beginning part of the solution.
Absolutely.
And then further on.
Sure. Yeah.
I think you mentioned once, like, if you have a toothache, you know, you can chant as much as you want, but
yeah,
sometimes just seeing a dentist would resolve
it. Make it a little easier. Yeah, your comment is very relevant also. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Generally, you know, like, when emotions are so disturbed, then it's very difficult to take to a spiritual process, right? So then the psychologist can sometimes help, or a friend can help. It's just some emotional care can help, and then one can apply himself to a spiritual process. Anyway, but you know, like, I think all of us are obviously have some experience in life, and I think a lot of these things are common sense. That ultimately we want the Bhagavad Gita to be part of the solution. But preliminary steps on the way, supportive things, nice. It's somewhere you want the Gita to come in, otherwise. Because a lot of therapies, a lot of psychology and all these kind of things are used to make people functional in society. It's like, what's a healthy person? Someone who can work so many days a week, you know, who can be a productive member in society. I mean, what's the definition of a healthy person? So many. And it's not always that the person who can work 5 days a week and all that, that he's necessarily a healthy person. Yeah. So, but psychology is sort of, it's part of that system, you know, in a way. Psychologists are paid to sort of, well, make people functional again, so. Whereas real mental health doesn't exist without the Gita. things. My escape time is getting close. Because I'm trying to tank up for the weekend today. It's like serious weekend. And